Welcome back to our study of Joshua. We are in chapter 5, and the last time we were together, we read verse 13, but I'm going to go back and read 13 again. And it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and looked over, and looked, and behold, there stood a man over against him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went up to him and said unto him, Art thou for us or for our adversaries? And he said, Nay, but as captain of the host of the Lord am I now come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and did worship and said unto him, What saith my Lord unto his servant?
You know, the reply here is very, very interesting to me, and I think there's a real principle in this that I see. It's, you know, Joshua being a military man, you see someone with a sword drawn, you think, is he on my side or the enemy's side? So when he approaches him and asks, he just simply says, No, I'm not on your side. I'm not on the enemy's side. I serve the Lord. I'm not at your command. I'm not at the enemy's command. Whatever God tells me to do, that's what I do. So I'm here representing the Lord, not you, and not them. And you think of the same thing today, you know, the Spirit of God, it's not that He's on our side or their side. He is the Lord. And what we have to do is get on His side. And so Joshua quickly understood that and falls on the ground that he's got to get on His side. And then you follow the lead of the Lord, not expecting the Lord to follow your lead. And too many people today are wanting God to follow them and empower them in what they want to do. And the bottom line is, if we want the blessing of God and the power of God exercised in our behalf, we're going to have to follow what He wants today. That may mean changing your agenda.
And the captain of the Lord's host said unto Joshua, Loose thy shoe from off thy foot, for the place whereon thou standest is holy. And Joshua did so.
Now, you know, it interests me the things that he says to Joshua and Joshua's response, somewhat similar to Moses before the burning bush. What was the first thing told him? You're standing on holy ground. Get your shoes off. And so Joshua has fallen on his face to the ground to worship this commander of the Lord's host. And then he asked him for instructions. What is it that you want me to do? And in other words, he immediately submits to him as the commander of the Lord's host. And he's told to take your shoes off. You're standing on holy ground. Now, that's all the information we have. I was telling Heather today, you know, you'd think there'd be more instruction. What is it that I'm to do? And there probably was. It's just not recorded. So we just go into the sixth chapter at Jericho, from here to Jericho, which is the first city. But the thing that we need to learn is to submit ourselves to the Lord before we even approach the enemy. You resist the devil by submitting to the Lord. James 4:7. Submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil and he flees from you. Okay? So you can't, your resistance is submission. You submit to God to resist the devil. So Joshua had to begin submitting before he could resist and overcome the enemy.
I think it's so interesting because so often it's easy for us to see our side or their side mm-hmm. without even taking into account God's side. We lose sight of that sometimes. Let's be on the Lord's side. Now Jericho was straitly shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in.
So, you know, from Rahab's report to these spies, everyone's afraid of them because they've heard of the reputation of their God. See, that's the thing. And so Jericho is there in a defensive mode. And so they've secured the city because of the Israelites, and nobody's going out and coming in. In other words, the entrance of the city is closed off. Okay.
And the Lord said unto Joshua, See, I have given unto thy hand Jericho, and the king thereof, and the mighty men of valor.
Here's another thing to think about, is the Israelites have not aggressively set siege against Jericho, but Jericho is under siege by its own volition. In other words, we're afraid of the army, and so we're going to lock our gates. You know, you can't leave here, and no one's coming in here. And Joshua, God has told Joshua that he's given him Jericho, he's given him the king, and he's given the military forces. Now, I don't know where, when and where Joshua was told that. It could be from the commander of the Lord's host. I don't know. Excuse me.
And verse 3, And ye shall compass the city, and ye men of war, and go round about the city once. Thus shalt thou do 6 days.
Now, here's where we can really learn some things if we'll pay attention. What God is instructing Joshua to do, he's told him, I've given you the city, the armies, but this is the most unorthodox way to engage in battle, if you will, okay? He said, I want you to take your army and the priest and the Ark of the Covenant, and I want you to walk around the city of Jericho one time each day for 6 days. That's all you're doing, is just walking around the city. Interesting strategy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And 7 priests shall bear the ark, 7 trumpets of ram's horns, and the 7th day ye shall compass the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow with trumpets.
So the 7th day, they're going to circle the city 7 times. Now these 7 priests each day, these 7 priests that had the trumpets of the ram's horns, were to go before the Ark of the Covenant and blow their trumpets. Now, sort of get a visual of this. You see the people in Jericho, the inhabitants of Jericho, the armies, as well as the residents. They're there in the city, and you see this army marching around and priests blowing horns. What does that mean? And then they leave. That make you scratch your head, won't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it shall come to pass that when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when ye hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city shall fall down flat, and the people shall ascend up, every man straight before him.
So on that 7th day, the first 6 days, they circle the city, blowing the horn, they go back to camp. They come back the next day, go back to camp, do the same thing for 6 days. The 7th day, they get up early. They circle the city, blowing the horns, only this time it's 7 times that they circle the city. And the Lord is instructed Joshua on the seventh time, you circle it, you have the priest to sound with a long blast on the trumpets, and then everybody shout. And he said, at this time, the walls of Jericho will fall, and you'll be able to enter into the city. Now, something to point out, when he said the walls will fall, that doesn't mean that 360 degree of wall fell. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't, I don't know. But don't read into it what's not there. Okay? Enough of the wall fell for them to go in and destroy the city. It's just that's the thing you need to see. And there's a reason for me saying this.
And Joshua the son of Nun called the priest and said unto them, take up the ark of the covenant, and let seven priests bear seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark of the Lord.
And so they get their instruction. Joshua gets the instructions. Then he tells the priest. And then they implement this instruction. In other words, you get it, but then you have to put it into practice. And so Joshua tells the priest, all right, you carry that Ark of the Covenant. You go before the Ark of the Covenant. These seven men go, seven priests going before the Ark of the Covenant, blowing his ram's horn.
And he said unto the people, pass on and compass the city, and let him that is armed pass on before the Ark of the Lord.
So the army's just marching around. Not doing a thing, just marching.
And it came to pass, when Joshua spoke unto the people, that the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns passed on before the Lord and blew with the trumpets, and the ark of the covenant of the Lord followed them.
Now this is pretty remarkable in that they're not arguing over this battle strategy.
Yeah.
What do you mean? We're not going to fight. Just march and keep your mouth shut. Yeah, you understand that's basically what they're doing. Nobody's to say anything. And you're going to find that. Joshua's given the order, don't talk. We're just going to march around. Priests are going to blow. We're going to go back to camp. We're going to do the same thing until that seventh time, the seventh day.
And the armed men went before the priests that blew with the trumpets, and the rearward came after the ark, the priests going on and blowing with the trumpets.
The rear reward is actually a rear guard. In other words, there's a guard going behind that Ark of the Covenant. That's what that's all about. And they're just doing what God's told them to do.
And Joshua had commanded the people, saying, ye shall not shout nor make any noise with your voice, neither shall any word proceed out of your mouth until the day I bid you shout. Then shall ye shout.
Now, I referred to that earlier. You just march. You don't talk. You keep your mouth shut. I learned that in the military. Yeah, you get in trouble talking. Especially boot camp. You find yourself doing more than marching.
So the ark of the Lord compassed the city, going about it once, and they came into the camp and lodged in the camp.
Okay, I think I've already spoken to that.
Yeah.
Just keep reading.
And Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priest took up the ark of the Lord. And seven priests bearing seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark of the Lord went on continually and blew with the trumpets, and the armed men went before them. But the rearward came after the ark of the Lord, the priests going on and blowing with the trumpets. Verse 14, and the second day they compassed the city once and returned into the camp. So they did 6 days. And it came to pass on the seventh day that they rose early about the dawning of the day and compassed the city after the same manner 7 times. Only on that day they compassed the city 7 times. And it came to pass at the seventh time, when the priests blew the trumpets, Joshua said unto the people, Shout, for the Lord hath given you the city. And verse 17?
Go ahead.
And the city shall be accursed, even it and all that are therein to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all that are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent.
And so Joshua has declared to them, when that trumpet sounds, that with the long blast, those trumpets sound with the long blast, that seventh time, the walls are going to fall down. All right, now you go in and take care of business. But Rahab, the two spies that went in, they had an assignment. Their assignment was to go in and rescue her and her family. Everything else was to be totally destroyed, and nothing was to be taken. Now, if you're looking at the King James, I think it is, it's talking about the city being devoted to God, everything devoted to God. In other words, this is the first city that they're taking. And Heather asked me today, she said, is that like first fruits? And to me, it is. In other words, God gets the first. You don't take anything. This is God's. And if you do, you're cursed. Pretty serious, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And so they have their instructions, and the spies have their instructions. They have her family. You're responsible for them. But they'd made a covenant with her, remember?
Mm-hmm. In verse 18, And ye in any wise keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest you make yourselves accursed when you take of the accursed thing and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it.
Now, note the warning that Joshua gives here. It's not just the person.
Yeah.
But any violator is going to incur a severe penalty, but it doesn't stop there. He said, and the camp of Israel will be ill affected from your action. Okay? No man's an island. And when you disobey God, it has ripple effect.
Verse 19, But all the silver and gold and vessels of brass and iron are consecrated unto the Lord. They shall come into the treasury of the Lord.
Now, that's the first fruits that we were talking about. The silver, the gold, the brass, the iron, all these things will pass the fire test. They're to be devoted to the Lord. These are the Lord's. Don't you take any of this. This is the Lord's. Okay?
So the people shouted when the priests blew with the trumpets. And it came to pass when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city.
Okay. Now, the reason I mentioned what I did before about the walls is because, if you remember previously, it said Rahab's house was on the wall, or in the wall, depending on the translation that you're reading. And so, obviously, if that had been the case where her house fell, they would have probably been injured or killed, wouldn't you think? And so that's why I said, don't just assume that everything fell. The walls fell down flat to where the army could get in. Now, some people say the wall just sunk into the ground. We don't have any evidence of that. All we know is the wall fell down. They didn't have to use battering rams to take the wall down. The wall fell down, giving them access to the city. And then these two spies can go straight in and rescue Rahab and her family.
And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, and ox and sheep and ass with the edge of the sword.
Now, this bothers some people. You know, well, how could you go in, destroy this, destroy that? Because God said so. And God's smarter than you are. God knows that evil reproduces evil. So if you want to stop something, don't deal with the symptom, go to the root of the problem. If you don't want any fruit of it, dig the root out. And then you'll cut it off. And that was the whole thing. Go in and get it out. That's everything. Men, women, not just the army. You understand? Men, women, children, animals. Kill them all. You understand? Kill it all. These have been devoted to evil practices, that I want it all destroyed. The only thing you save in this city is the silver, the gold, the iron, the brass, and that's mine. Don't you touch it. Now, this is why the Lord's not on your side. He's not on the enemy's side. He's God and God alone. It's up to us whether we get on His side and do things His way.
Verse 22. But Joshua said unto the two men that had spied out the country, Go into the harlot's house and bring out thence the woman, and that all that she hath, as ye swore unto her. And the young men that were spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father and her mother and her brethren and all that she had, and they brought out all her kindred and left them without the camp of Israel.
If you think about this, these two spies are the only ones that actually know how to access Rahab's house. Okay, which house? Now, they know Joshua's two spies know that there's a red cord hanging out the window, or supposed to be anyway. And so they have an assignment to go in, and while everybody else is engaged in battle, wiping these out, they're rescuing. It's amazing, isn't it? These over here are killing everything, and the two spies are rescuing the ones they're in covenant with. And they take them outside the camp. Okay.
And they burnt the city with fire, and all that was therein, only the silver and the gold and the vessels of brass and of iron, they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord.
So you understand, they totally destroyed the city, not just killing the inhabitants, but they burned the city. They did away with the city, if you will. And we'll talk about that in a minute here.
And Joshua saved Rahab, the harlot, alive, and her father's household, and all that she had, and she dwelt in Israel even unto this day, because she hid the messengers which Joshua sent to spy out Jericho.
So at the time that this was recorded, the writing was recorded, Rahab lived with the Israelites, okay? She kept her word to the spies. They kept their word to her. And you find her in the lineage of Jesus. That's amazing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And Joshua adjured them at that time, saying, Cursed be the man before the Lord that riseth up and buildeth this city Jericho. He shall lay the foundation thereof in his firstborn, and in his youngest son shall he set up the gates of it.
So once the city is destroyed, Joshua pronounces a curse over that city. Anyone who rebuilds Jericho, your firstborn is going to die when you lay the foundation, and your youngest will die when you set its gates. Read 1 Kings chapter 16, if you would, and verse 34. 1 Kings 16, and verse 34.
In his days did Hiel, the Bethlehemite, build Jericho. He laid the foundation thereof in Abiram, his firstborn, and set up the gates thereof in his youngest son, Segub, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke by Joshua, the son of Nun.
So the city was rebuilt. And when the guy laid the foundation, his firstborn died. When he set the gates, his youngest died. Spoken over the land, the curse. And the curse came to pass, you understand?
Verse 27, so the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was noised throughout all the country.
Not only did they hear what took place on the other side of Jordan and the crossing of Jordan, now they're experiencing what's taking place in their land. Jericho, a fortified city, is now destroyed. And so Joshua's fame is spreading throughout the country. This is a force to reckon with.
But the children of Israel committed a trespass in the accursed thing. For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, took of the accursed thing, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against the children of Israel.
Now look at this. God's angry with the nation of Israel. Remember what Joshua said, that it'll affect the camp? Mm-hmm. So God's angry with the nation of Israel because of what Achan had done in taking some of the accursed things from Jericho. And now it's affecting the entire nation.
And Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is beside Beth-Aven, on the east side of Bethel, and spake unto them, saying, go up and view the country. And the men went up and viewed Ai.
So they're doing us a buzz. They're getting the game plan, this battle strategy. And so these guys go up to Ai, and then they come back and report to Joshua, you know, advising him what they think he should do militarily.
And they returned to Joshua and said unto him, let not all the people go up, but let about 2,000 or 3,000 men go up and smite Ai, and make not all the people to labor thither, for they are but a few.
Now these guys are soldiers. They go up, they evaluate. They come back and they say, they're small in number. We don't need to send all the armies against them. Send 2,000 or 3,000 troops up against them. That should be sufficient to take the city of Ai.
So there went up thither of the people about 3,000 men, and they fled before the men of Ai. And the men of Ai smote of them about 36 men, and chased them from before the gate even unto Shibarim, and smote them in the going down, wherefore the hearts of the people melted. And
so 3,000 troops go up and attack Ai, but Ai comes out, chases them away, and kills 36 Israelis in the process. And fear just grips the heart of their armies. They're running before the enemy.
And Joshua rent his clothes and fell to the earth upon his face before the ark of the Lord until the eventide, he and the elders of Israel, and put dust upon their heads.
So Joshua is shocked at what has happened. Not registering with him what he said, that the camp of Israel would be afflicted if someone took the accursed thing. And so he and the elders are shocked. They tear their clothes and put dust on their head as an act of humility, fall on their faces before the Ark of the Covenant until the evening.
And Joshua said, alas, O Lord God, wherefore hast thou at all brought this people over Jordan to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us? Would to God we had been content and dwelt on the other side of the Jordan.
So Joshua prays an interesting prayer here. Basically, he's accusing God. You're responsible for our defeat. You know, we're going to come in here and take this land. What in the world is going on? Here we've gone up against the enemy, and now the enemy's beaten up. But we should just stay on the other side of Jordan. A lot of pressure on the leader, you understand. What is going on?
O Lord, what shall I say when Israel turneth their backs before their enemies?
You understand? Running. Coward. What am I supposed to say? I mean, this is making the Lord look bad. Everybody's afraid of our God. And now here we are running before the enemy. What can I say? We can't stand against the enemy.
For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land shall hear of it and shall even run us around and cut off our name from the earth. And what will thou do unto thy great name?
You think about this. They hear that the small city of Ai has defeated them. Then everybody allied together and just come and swarm them and wipe them out. And then what's going to happen to your great name? You're going to be slandered.
And the Lord said unto Joshua, get thee up, wherefore liest thou thus upon thy face?
Interesting reply. Joshua's crying out to the Lord, and the Lord said, get up from lying on your face.
Israel has sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them. For they have even taken of the accursed thing, and have also stolen and disassembled also, and they have put it even among their own stuff.
Now, it's interesting that God said Israel has sinned. He didn't say Achan has sinned. He said Israel has sinned. Now, Joshua has the responsibility of finding out who in Israel sinned. I find that very interesting that God just didn't pinpoint the one who had sinned, but he put that responsibility on Joshua. He says, somebody's taken of the accursed thing. Somebody has robbed me. They've stolen what was devoted to me. Now deal with it is the essence of it. You deal with it.
Therefore, the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies, but turned their backs before their enemies, because they were accursed. Neither will I be with you any more, except you destroy the accursed from among you.
So what God's saying, I'm not your problem. Your problem's right there in your camp. And until you get that sin out of the camp, I won't be with you. You won't be able to stand against your enemy. So you'd better deal with this. Now, there's a principle in that. And this is the unpleasant part of oversight. There's things that have to be dealt with. Not everyone understands it because you don't divulge everything you know. But when God tells you to do something, you do what God tells you to do for the sake of all concern. Okay? And people will talk about you.
Up, sanctify the people, and say, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow. For thus saith the Lord God of Israel, there is an accursed thing in the midst of thee, O Israel. Thou cannot stand before thine enemies until ye take away the accursed thing from among you.
So they're doomed for destruction until they deal with this problem. I'm not going to be with you till you deal with the problem. You get the problem out of your camp. So Joshua's telling the people, all right, you cleanse yourself. In other words, we're going to be before God tomorrow. And you better be clean when you come before God. And he assured them, that they couldn't stand before the enemy until whoever took the accursed thing was destroyed. We have to get this out of the camp. Now, God's going to show us, you better be clean. You understand? Prepare yourself. And you'll find when God was showing up to the nation of Israel, like under even under Moses' leadership, you'd be clean. And he would give them an advance notice. 3 days, or in this case, tomorrow, I'm going to show up. Now, get your act together. You've got from now till tomorrow. You better be clean when you come before me. Because we're going to reveal who the enemy is. Okay, we'll stop here and take a break and come back to this.